For May the 23rd, 2025, we talk about Doom, The Dark Ages, Lost Records, Bloom and Rage, Void Crew, and much more. Welcome to Level 544. My name is Kay Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Moxie.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Rocking it three style tonight. Got last minute notice from Ben. Ben's on vacation.
Nice.
I hope it wasn't a last minute vacation. Makes it sound like he's on the run from the police.
It does. Yeah. he did update his contact photo to be him with a fake mustache. Might be from an unrelated venture, though. Yeah.
And after he signed off with you, you heard him yelling before he hung up, "You'll never take me alive."
Yeah. It was comical is what it was. Who's been doing something? Who's been doing something cool?
I've been experiencing, well, I wouldn't even call it cool. I don't know about around UK, but here it is cicada time.
So, oh, nice. I love that.
So Cincinnati is on a different brood than the Mansfield area.
Yeah. And even like my suburb of Cincinnati seems to be on a different brood than like one over. Because we are coated in cicadas right now.
Oh.
And in just, 15 minutes north of us, they haven't seen hide nor tail of them. Wing nor tail? Do cicadas have hide? Is a carapace considered a hide?
They have not seen chitin nor wing.
There you go.
I think you probably use the leather crafting skill to make armor out of it. Therefore, it is hide.
Okay.
Fair enough. Cicada hide armor coming to a shop near you.
Anything smaller than a horse is a dog. that's from Community. That's not me.
That's thermodynamics right there.
Yep.
Or whatever. But yeah, so for anyone who doesn't have these emerge near them, I don't know how centric to the Midwest it is or if it's spread around. It's been ubiquitous for me growing up here.
Yeah.
But these things, hibernate underground, and then I think it's on a rotating thing of every 17 years.
It's 17-ish years. Yeah.
Yeah. Specific number, but
I think it's like there's some each year, but then every 17 years it like syncs up or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And then every five, there's a larger brood or whatever. Yeah. But the fun thing, about that is like, this is a smaller one. So it really wasn't on, my radar or anyone in the family's radar before it was like upon us. And so to go from having not thought about cicadas for several years to, oh my God, cicadas everywhere is interesting. Jen found out because, one of the kids who was over playing, came in and was setting something on the counter. And she, just didn't register what it was until she looked over and there were like 15 cicada husks.
Oh no.
She's like, let me get you a container for that, buddy.
Yeah.
We had a little cicada, collection going on there.
Okay.
Chirping. Like, well,
we haven't gotten that yet. So
the all pervading drone, the deafening roar of the cicadas.
Once that starts, I can just go to sleep instantly.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. It is cicadas, right after, or during a little bit of rain. Man, you got white noise paradise there.
Yeah.
Can you
imagine being a bird?
Oh yeah, it's easy street.
Oh my gosh!
Well, I mean, that's like the whole theory of why they do it is like the whole idea is if they all come out at once, it's not possible for all of them to get eaten.
Okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
I also imagine it's got to be frustrating because they leave the husks behind, and so while you are surrounded by cicadas, it's like every other one is a decoy.
Yeah. Just like the lifespan of a robin is 2 years. So like the chance of you living in this like miraculous time of plenty that like literally nobody younger or older than you believes is happening.
This utopia lives in legend.
Mm-hmm. I like, have you seen the, what is it? The, cicada husk. There's actually a cicada husk. Pokemon.
No way. No.
It's like, there's a cicada Pokemon, and when it evolves, if you have an extra party slot, you'll get both the evolved form of that and the husk Pokemon.
The Shedinja, I think, is the name of it. Ninkeda is the one of the forms.
Delightfully on the nose, as always with Pokemon.
Yes.
I was going to tangent big time. I kind of want to see the Pokemon exhibit at like what it's like one of the various natural history museums, or whatever, where it's half dinosaur fossils, half fake Pokemon fossils.
They lose track of which is which. Yeah,
partially because the biggest thing I want from Pokemon is I want the games and movies, wherever, to start capturing just how terrifying living in that world would be.
The Detective Pikachu movie got pretty close to that, actually.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. No, what I was going to say, I worked at a golf course, during like the big 17-year brood, when we were like, I don't know, 12, Moxie? It was over at BJ's place. His parents, his folks' golf course, and just like every single day, like just we'd have to go out and do some stuff and come back and then just like pick the cicadas off of each other because they would just be covering us. Yeah,
ridiculous.
Huh. Well,
so yeah, that is the wonder or the horror of nature. I'm experiencing right now, depending on how you look at it.
Nice. Moxie, how about you?
Man, not a whole lot. I think I might have said this last time, but, you know, getting prepped for Pride, you know, all that sort of stuff, you know, planning that out. And then just, you know, slowly getting, you know, settled into the new apartment. Big thing now is I just got some blackout curtains from Amazon, so gotta be hanging those up in my bedroom.
Love me a good blackout curtain.
Yeah.
Yep. It's it's kind of important, especially since. Sorry, weird thing about me. I sleep with my eyes open.
Okay.
And so like if it's not pitch black, I have trouble sleeping.
Okay.
I have no idea why I sleep with my eyes.
Yeah, I was going to ask if that's like a medical thing.
The only thing I can figure is like when I was really young, I was terrified of the dark. I mean, absolutely terrified. And so I'd try to like stay up all night, like watching out for monsters or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, inevitably would go to sleep. So I think maybe just like, you know, trying to force myself to keep my eyes open, not fall asleep, and then eventually, you know, just fell asleep. That's the only thing I can figure.
Hmm.
I have a vague memory of freshman year of college of finding that out about you for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I remembered it being like a I read online you could do it, so I do kind of thing, but I might have just filled that in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
This is like a from childhood thing.
Yeah.
Impressive. Hmm.
But so that's all I'm doing is
going to be a ninja.
Yes, exactly. That's pretty much it. Just getting the apartment together, trying to survive the crazy world we find ourselves in.
Yeah. Really not a whole lot going on. Went to an engagement party for my sister. Over the weekend. So that was very nice. Got to see some family members that I haven't seen for a very long time. And got to meet, some family members, from, the husband's side, or, you know, fiance's side. Yeah.
Let's not jump the gun here. The entire point of the engagement party is to make this guy feel like he's on thin ice.
You're on the bubble. I almost said his name, and I don't know that he would want his name up there. It was a very good time. Other than that, most of what I've been doing has been watching What We Do in the Shadows television show.
Oh yeah, that's good.
Oh yeah, that's good stuff.
That's a really funny. I'd never seen it. Didn't have whatever streaming service it was on, blah, blah, blah. And then eventually when I found out it was really good, it was like, well, I'm just going to wait for it to be done because I don't want to, you know, fall off of it when they take 3 years between seasons now. So it wrapped up and we started doing the Vampire the Masquerade Bloodline season of Real Lich Hours here. And I was like, well, there are probably going to be a bunch of jokes pulled from that very popular television show. So I'm going to need to catch up with that. And it's delightful.
Well, I was about to say, like, in particular, isn't Gary a huge fan of that show?
Yes. Yeah. Gary loves that show. Yeah. Yep.
Do you have a favorite vampire so far? As a side note,
there is an amazing, if you're ever looking for a pen and paper game, vampiresuck.... at shopping is an amazing game that's basically just, like, inspired by that.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So do you have a favorite vampire and why is it the energy vampire?
Well, I mean, casting Mark Proksch as a, as an energy vampire. So I mostly know Mark Proksch from the cinematic universe, the Tim Heidecker, Greg Turkington thing. Casting Mark Proksch as an energy vampire is so fucking genius. It is so good. Yeah. So like, I mean, Colin Robinson in A Walk, but, beyond that, I mean, Laszlo, anything that Matt Berry says is funny just by virtue of him saying it.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
It is. It's a lot of fun. I think I'm like a season and a half in. My favorite one so far was the feud with the werewolves where he wins. They're fighting on a rooftop.
Yeah.
And he wins the fight by just throwing a bone off the rooftop. Yep. And just the physical comedy of the guy like reflexively diving after it is so good. Like there's so much subtle and witty stuff in the show, but sometimes just a good dude jumping off a roof is pretty hilarious.
It's a live action cartoon in a lot of ways.
Yes.
Yeah. So better late than never, but I am having a good time. I'm like in the middle of season three or something like that. I'm really jetting through it. So
nice.
Yeah. I've also been playing some video games, and to talk about those, we're going to have to do the regular kind of show, What with the Grind, the Multiplayer, and the End Boss. And why don't we get started with
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the last period of time or so. I'm going to go because I have something new.
Nice.
Yeah. Get down with your bad self.
Yeah. I, over the past week, played and finished Lost Records Bloom and Rage.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah. This is the new game from Don't Nod, the Life is Strange people, not Deck Nine, the people who took over Life is Strange, but the original Life is Strange and Life is Strange 2 folks.
Oh, man, the cover art for this is Life is Strange AF.
Oh, yeah. The entire thing is very Life is Strange, to the point where I think it maybe suffers a little bit in comparison. Because I think the story in Life is Strange is stronger and the performances are better, but this is not without its particular charms. So this is a cinematic adventure game along the lines of a Life is Strange. It's not strictly episodic, although they did kind of release it in two parts. I think the second tape of it came out here like in April or something like that. The first part of it came out late last year. You are playing as like your point of view character is a woman named Swan, and somebody that you were friends with from your hometown has called you and your group of friends back because of a mysterious thing that happened related to your past 27 years ago. And if you're thinking, if you're
is
thinking
that
how
this they
is
describe
basic,
it?
I like you just get a message saying, hey, you guys need to come back to our small town in the Upper Peninsula because, you know, there's something related to what happened the summer of 1995. It takes place in 2022.
It's such an original idea.
I was going to say, okay. if you're thinking, hey, this is basically the premise of It, you are correct. It is. If it was not, if the childhood part took place in the 90s instead of 1958 or 1980 something, like in the movies, right? Mm-hmm. And it wears its Stephen King influences on its sleeve. It's also influenced by stuff like the Craft. But like you are kind of sitting at this bar, with the grown up versions of these characters, like none of you have memories of what happened that summer, but kind of reliving, trying to recount to each other, what happened back then and kind of piecing together the story that way of, you know, this last summer that you spent together. Before this terrible thing happened and you all made a promise to each other never to see each other again.
Huh.
And everything is kind of, you know, split, where you're kind of playing out something that happened in the past, and then kind of like checking back in the future and seeing how that like reflects in the conversations and relationships, you know, there in the present as you're like talking about stuff. There's a high degree of reactivity to this. Like there are, you know, lots of ways, both major and cosmetic, that your actions and choices about like who you decide to, you know, side with or who you spend time with. And like also just like, you know, if you're aggressive or if you're, you know, kind of shy, like different stuff will kind of change on those axes as you kind of play out the summer of these four young women. You know, I think they're all 16 or something like that, who kind of meet each other and form a very ill-advised and cringy little like Riot Girl punk band. Kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah. And
what else is one to do in the 90s?
Yeah. It's really, come on.
That's life goals.
So when you say cosmetic differences, are you talking about like, oh, I got injured in the memory, so now when it comes back, she's got scarring on her arms or something
It's like, oh, like she will like, if she got an injury back then, she'll like roll up her sleeve and show you. So that's where I got this. I had no memory, you know, or like, oh, that's not how I remember getting this to happen. Talking about like what the supernatural side of this is hard without spoiling things. I will say, in talking about kind of the relative weaknesses of this compared to Life is Strange, it takes a long time to get going. You spend a lot of time in the getting to know these characters kind of zone. And there is nothing as like, visually dramatic or like storytelling affecting as Max's time travel abilities in Life is Strange.
So I feel like that was kind of my feeling on Life is Strange, is like you screwed up by making the rewind a superpower, because this is something that just all games of this genre should have innately.
but it didn't, right? And also some stuff, you know, as the story demanded, it was, you know, was permanent, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
This is very interesting to me in terms of just like actual memory science. An astounding amount of what you think are your memories are fabricated.
Yeah. Yeah.
And thus subject to change based on, you know, later influences. So this kind of like reminiscing and having that impact things, mm-hmm. is again, not asking you to comment on the supernatural elements, but that is closer to reality than one might think. You know, you have a friend saying, oh yeah, that summer XYZ happened, and your reaction is like, mm-hmm. oh right. That's, and then you have this whole flood of memories that are literally mm-hmm. manufactured by your own mind.
Yes.
Well, it's, you know, consensus reality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's Oliver Sacks stuff, along with the line of, like, you know, every time you remember something, you're changing the memory, or you're only remembering the last time you remembered it, or something like that.
I'm sorry. I heard that is all of our sex stuff.
No, not what I said, but okay.
Yeah. I know that's not what you said, but that's what I heard for some reason.
Now I'm wondering if, like, memory kink is, like, a thing.
Oh.
I don't even know what that would mean.
Somebody actually gets off on being gaslit.
No, you can't remember what it means, and that's what's hot.
There's a kind of a, like, a minor mechanic, like, by to do collectibles. So your character Swan, she is like a budding filmmaker, and she has a camcorder, and like, certain scenes will ask you, like, okay, film things related to this. Obviously, like, a big part of it is trying to make, like, a music video for your band, but there are also, like, things in the environment that you can, you know, make recordings of and collect, or, you know, particular, like, important moments if you catch them, where they will work that into the way things play out in a very fun way using the kind of camcorder footage that you get.
That's really cool, because that's, like, the one way you could verify something is as actually true. Interesting.
Yeah.
Are there any places where you felt like that was cheap, though, in terms of, like, I didn't point it at that one corner, so.
No, like, whenever it was played back, I was like, oh, I specifically remember getting this, because you have to, like, search for the shot, right?
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, what's that?
Is her band called Swan Song?
No.
So it's called her Blue band Rage. Called Swan Song?
No. No, it's not. No.
But I remember it was called Swan Song, so.
Oh, okay. No, I'm looking at it here. It's called Bloom and Rage on it. I don't know what the subtitle thing is, like, Lost Records, like, if they're going to try and make this, like, a new Life is Strange kind of series that they own, you know, after handing that off to Deck Nine. I have no clue. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I don't know the background. Was there bad blood in that handoff? Were they pushed out? Is there any kind of, like, see, we're fine on our own?
No. Game? I think they just wanted to move on to other stuff. Yeah.
Good. Nice.
Yeah. But, like, I don't know, something that is different than Life is Strange, whereas that was mostly the relationship between Max and Chloe. Like, you are playing a Swan in this, but, like, it is a, you know, a group of four people. And, you know, I think part of the, you know, more time spent setting things up is getting to know the different girls, you know? So, like, there is that kind of throwing off, like, the ratio of time to pay off kind of stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't regret the time that I spent with it. I just found myself, wanting to, basically remembering the first time that I played, like, Life is Strange and how good that was, you know? And I think after this, you know, I'm like, oh, well, there's that new Life is Strange game too, the Double Exposure, which is, like, a direct sequel to Life is Strange 1 that I am curious about. So I'm probably going to move on to that, but yeah, Lost Records, Bloom and Rage.
Very nice. Cool.
Yeah.
Do you have a sense of, I know, given that they have spent so much more time, you know, in the getting to know you phase, did they also go longer in other sections of the game? Like, in general, is this a longer game, or?
It's about, like, 12 hours, I think, which is probably combined what Life is Strange, the five episodes of that were.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that was episodic.
Life is Strange? Yeah. No, that was released in a ton of cliffhangers is what that was. Like, I remember, like, the time between the episodes got longer and longer.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I think
in-game time or time between in real life.
No, in real life. There just were a bunch of schedule slips, which is what happens with the episodic games.
Sure.
Yeah.
I still have a chip on my shoulder about them ending it by just being like, we're just going to reset the entire playboard.
Only if you choose one particular ending.
This, we're going to reset the entire play board, or the entire universe is going to end.
It's well, they follow that in the comics, which I need to read. I got like a collection of those. Yeah, your grudge with Life is Strange is as famous as your grudge with the Stanley Parable, I think.
Well, the difference is I love Life is Strange. I just have a problem with how it ended.
Oh, yeah.
No. But yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's neat. It's different. I don't know. Also, yeah, like
that does sound really cool.
Particular 90s nostalgia, too. It's like, you know, I just going around looking at stuff in, you know, like Swan's bedroom, which is, you know, kind of a home base for certain things. And it's like, oh, I had that exact same pencil case. Shit like that. Yeah. Right.
I love the revival of the kind of Stranger Things-esque, I guess, Kids on Bikes, I've heard it called, kind of genre.
Free range children.
I was going to say this had Stranger Things vibes.
Yeah. Which also is, you know, cribbing incredibly heavily from Stephen King. It kind of
absolutely.
You know, and also why, like, if you wrote it today and cast back 27 years, 1998, you were still doing that kind of stuff. But at a certain point, like, it and, you know, Lost Records, like, those stories don't work because kids would not be unsupervised. Like, the indifference of the parents is so important to these stories, you know, in terms of being out there on your own and getting into a shitload of trouble. Yeah.
I don't know. I've known some indifferent parents.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just in terms of like I don't know, you and me, Moxie, like there was a lot of time spent unaccounted for, just out.
Oh, yeah.
Just
yeah.
out.
Totally.
Gone.
Totally. Yeah.
In a way that I, you know, for my younger family members specifically did not happen.
Yeah. Just the advent of cell phones causes that as much as any intent of the parents.
You're just more surveilled, right?
Yeah.
Even before you get into stuff like, what is it? Life 365 or whatever. I know people who are just on that, and there are people who can just know where they are at all times. And the idea of that just makes me like, it makes it difficult to breathe thinking of that.
Yeah. It's very easy to go overboard.
Yeah. So any questions about, Bloom and Rage?
No, glad you're enjoying it.
Yeah. Enjoyed it. I already beat it.
Excuse me. Huh? I mean, you're enjoying talking about it, right?
Yeah, I did. I also finished up The Last of Us Part 2, nice. Which is very good mechanically all the way throughout. The second half of the story is also very good. Playing as the other character, playing as Abby. Abby can do no wrong. It is the final act, like the epilogue, where the story, it beguiles belief. Some of the decisions, decisions that a character make that render the entire thing basically unrelatable to me. And that is as far as I can get without it being.
I mean, that's kind of Last of Us's thing, right?
It goes even further. It goes even further than that.
Is it? I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
In what I thought was going to be like basically an epilogue cutscene. Undoes a lot.
Yeah. I was very frustrated by that. I thought it was very bad storytelling, even if there were comeuppances, you know, related to it. But
are they done with this now? Can they go back to making like better games?
I don't know. I don't know if they're done with it. I know they're working on something else. It's like that spaceship game, something.
And apparently an additional game as well.
Yeah. I've got no clue. Like I have no problems with the gameplay in The Last of Us Part 2. It's a huge step up from The Last of Us Part 1 in terms of like stealth action, you know, like gunfights, like the violence feels very devastating in it in a way that is not often sold in video games, which tend to trivialize it or make it feel light. I'm not just talking about screaming out the dead person's name, you know, like, which is more just funny than anything, but
Yeah. I mean, like, you can always nitpick the game to be better, and there are certainly places where it falls down, but just in terms of, like, I think how much it accomplishes on in the grand scheme of things is still incredibly admirable. Like, just from a gameplay, a storytelling, like any directive or direction you could assess this by, it does an incredibly good job. Just with, you know, with something you love like that, you're going to nitpick.
Yeah. It's, it is an extremely good example of a kind of game that I do not think should exist anymore, which is the, you know, the kind of games, with a body count behind them, you know, lost marriages, mm-hmm. whatever, labor abuses, et cetera. Like, no game needs to look this good. It's impressive. No game needs to look that good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only other thing, and this isn't me talking, you know, because nobody needs to hear me talk about Rocksmith again. It's interactive tablature. It's great. But I was really surprised to see that Rocksmith 2014 Remastered is back on sale. If you think back to me, you know, several years ago talking about how disappointing Rocksmith Plus was, part of that disappointment was they delisted Rocksmith 2014, which is the one that is not subscription and which is really moddable with custom DLC. Like, they delisted that. So if you wanted to play it, you were not able to get it from Steam or anywhere else. However, that has been relisted for $9.99. I don't know what the Real Tone cable or whatever is going for these days, but, like, for what you get with it and the ability to do custom DLC, it is still an amazing learning tool for guitar and bass. So fuck yeah. Like, they fixed that. It was a real problem. I think when they relisted it, maybe they took some songs out of it because of licensing nice. Stuff, but you know, you can Google. Mm-hmm. Google exists. Yeah. So yeah, I just wanted to give that as a PSA more than anything.
Very cool.
Nice. That's pretty cool.
Hence the guitar practice that you mentioned off there.
Guitar or bass? Or non-bass guitar or bass guitar? Both?
I do have both. I put down music for a long time because of depression stuff, but I've been feeling good enough to pick it back up. Mm-hmm. Working on guitar right now. According to my electrolysis technician, the trans girl playing the bass is a real cliche. So yeah, I don't know. I like playing the bass though. It's there. I'm not as good at it as guitar, but yeah.
So at some point I need to pick your guys' brain, cause I'm thinking of trying to pick up guitar and I have no idea, like, guitars cost anything from like $50 to like more than $1,000.
Yeah. I can help you. I got you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have stumbled right into Kay's wheelhouse.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Did you hear the stories about her niece?
Uh-huh.
Activated her trap card.
Yes. Yeah. So we can talk offline, but like I can, mm-hmm. I can guide
definitely.
You.
Definitely.
Yeah. Who wants to go next?
I've got the new hotness to talk about.
Okay.
Doom the Dark Ages came out.
Okay. I was about to comment that none of us have tried this yet.
Oh no, mon frere. I am into it.
Okay.
Been playing it and really kind of binging it. I had forgotten just how easy it is to lose time in Doom. Just you start moving, you get in the flow state, and you just don't come out. Because it feels so good to pinball around a level and rip demons to shreds. And at least from what I've played of the Dark Ages so far, it really understands the assignment on that front.
Okay. To set this up, the reactions that I have seen from people playing it, and this is on Blue Sky and a little bit in the Slack, is people being a little bit disappointed, saying really? That it is slow and it doesn't put its best foot forward, that like the really interesting and cool stuff takes a while everybody is conceding that the shield mechanic fucking owns.
Yes. Shield mechanic does own. The place where it has felt slow is in some of the levels take a bit of a more open approach versus being a pretty tightly
arena
wound corridor shooter
arena. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what happens is you kind of have your freedom to choose how you're going to go about destroying these four things in the level or whatever. And it's a much bigger level. You can get in a situation where you've bloodbathed your way to one side, but then to get to the other, you just kind of have to run back through that empty side, to get back into the action.
There were stages like that in Doom Eternal, I remember, and getting lost in a Doom stage is one of the least fun things in the world.
Yeah. That is where I could agree with the slow, critique is in getting to the next objective. There's probably some things they could have done for that just in terms of, there is a lot of really cool mobility stuff in the game. And so just turning that on to get you out of an empty area faster would go so far to making things smooth. However, in combat, I think this is one of the fastest feeling Dooms I've played. Really? And that comes from the melee focus of the game. So you've got your shield always at your side, which is primarily employed Captain America style, whiz banging it around to various
primarily not demons. A shield.
Yes, primarily not a shield.
Yeah.
It's so funny. I have a distinct memory of reading an interview about Doom years and years and years, I think before even Eternal came out. I think it was about the reboot. And the person talking about how the design philosophy of the game was all about rewarding aggression.
Yeah.
And I remember the quote, he said, that is why Doom will never have a shield. And so my first reaction when I saw the Dark Ages was like, oops, they've lost their way. I have not been able to find that article. I've searched for it, but,
they had it deleted.
Yeah. or probably was written by one of the many organizations that no longer exist and have been absorbed into the corporate hell that is the way things go. But, yes, the shield does, like I said, you can use it at any point as kind of like a little, Captain America throw. But the big thing is you basically can use it at any point to, you shield bash an enemy, but it functions as a grappling hook. Like you can just grapple to any enemy and hit them with a big explosion, and kind of be across the map in a second. It's got a pretty long reach. And so as you're doing combat, any moment that you don't have an enemy that you are up in their grill, you can just, you know, click a button and get there. Combined with then a focus on melee weapons, there's a gauntlet to start and then you get a flail as well. How they're different, I couldn't tell you. but you kind of, as you're doing all this combat up in people's faces, you want to, you know, start melee combos. And if you can get three melee hits off in a row, there's like big damage on the other side of that. But enemies will constantly be doing attacks. Like while you are meleeing them, you are not stunning or interrupting them. And so you have to kind of switch up between melee combos and then parries with the shield, to kind of keep things going. And, you know, it's never the exact same pattern. It all just depends on what the enemy is doing at the time. And therein is a very interesting change, that was jarring at first, but I think I kind of like it. Your melee kills are no longer bespoke animations, at least by default. So in the previous games, you know, every time you did a melee kill, particularly on like the blinking enemies, right? It would have some kind of really gory over the top animation to reward you. So, you know, chainsawing someone in half or whatever.
Yeah. Depending on the angle and your relative speed and stuff like that.
Yeah. And there was kind of a fun little game of like, can I try to get a special angle to get the special animation?
Right. What happens if I do this while I'm falling on top of a Kako demon?
Exactly. Now the majority of the time, if you're front on, which is going to be most of your melee kills again, because it's such a, frequently used thing. It's just a boop. It's like, there's not a unique animation there. Now you can get, you know, if you intentionally like jump above them or do some special positioning, you can still get animations, but the majority of the time, it's just a boop, you know, and they fly back and you move on. And the first time that happened, I was like, wait, where's my gore? Where's my nice little animation treat for hitting the button at the right time?
Mm-hmm.
But as I've continued to play, I've realized that because you're using melee so much more in this game than you have in previous games, even as short as those animations were, it breaks the flow. And so you just not having that animation most of the time allows you to turn and get to the next thing that much faster.
Yeah. It wants you to take that and then parlay that kind of attack or combo or momentum onto the next thing that is going to be right there.
Mm-hmm. And you know, you're still getting a shower of gore. They're still ragdolling around. Mm-hmm. It's just not a bespoke, 0.25 second cutscene, yeah. if you will.
Yeah, I can see that. Even in Doom and Doom Eternal, the coolness of the animations was a treat enough to make you lose track of the fact that the game was taking control away from you for mm-hmm. like a little bit. Sometimes that mm-hmm. was a welcome reprieve, especially in Eternal. But like it. I am happy that they were confident in getting rid of that kind of beloved part of the game in order to preserve the flow that they knew would be needed. Play. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that moment to moment combat is, peak Doom. It feels very fast, and very weighty at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little touch. Like it truly feels like you're steering around, some kind of tank or something, in that like when you run upstairs and get to the top of the stairs, you'll actually like you can hear launch into the air slightly.
Okay.
And so you're moving around these like boom 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 footsteps, and then kind of floating through the air as you go off tiny ramps. So that feel is uniquely Doom of like, I am very fast and very heavy at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Just jumping from a high place and landing near enemies will send out a shockwave that explodes, grunt minions in a shower of gore, and lots of little touches like that. They do a great job. Like you called out, you can get stuck on one side of a level if you've cleared it too thoroughly and just kind of be plodding, to the next place. But in general, it's a really fun take on Doom.
Can you be scheming to the next place?
You could. I feel like that would be like side strafing.
Okay.
So forward.
Oh, what is the bunny hopping? Can you still do that to go super fast?
I don't know.
No, that's tribes, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think the original Doom had that too, didn't it?
There was no jumping in Doom.
Was there no? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
But we need to. Maybe okay, we need to.
I don't know.
We need to complete the bit. So going forwards is plotting.
Mm-hmm.
Going sideways is scheming. What is running backwards?
I think it's just running backwards.
No, that'd be too easy. Obfuscating there. Mm. No, it's a fun
absconding.
Game.
Absconding.
Yeah, there it is. I do not know what is going on in the lore, nor do I care.
So that like, that is a thing. Like I was shocked when we did the Doom Eternal episode of Watch mm-hmm. Out for Fireballs that people had affection for the lore heaviness of that.
Oh yeah. That's like the best part.
Oh, it's so bad. Oh my God.
A story in two parts.
Yeah. I know that's like that's a matter of taste, but like I yeah. like it was the volume and quality of it. It was delivered with absurd seriousness. And like none of it was interesting, like in comparison to the text in Doom 2016, which was funny and
oh,
and
to be fair,
brief.
I did not play Eternal, so okay. I'm going off a love from 2016.
Yeah, 2016 stuff is fine. Like it's a little bit, generic, psychotic corporation GLaDOS kind of stuff. But there's a charm to it. Doom Eternal, like it is a marked departure in terms of like trying to. I have no idea what even they're trying to accomplish with it. There's just so much of it and it is so dry.
Yeah. And I I don't think I finished Doom Eternal all the way. And I could not tell you, even after several hours in the Dark Ages, if this is a prequel, a sequel, a alternate universe. It, as the name implies, there's a lot of medieval kind of setting in the game, but also there's hover ships.
It's marketing.
As I understand,
go ahead.
Oh, as I understand, the whole thing that like they really doubled down on with the more recent Doom games is the idea that like the Doom Slayer is this eternal opponent of hell. And so my understanding is this is just supposed to be like, oh, this is what he was doing during the Middle Ages.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that. Again, even though it's the Middle Ages, you've got hover ships.
Right.
And obviously advanced weaponry.
Well, yeah, because so, you're hopping between dimensions and the heaven dimension, even in Eternal was like all like clean futuristic or whatever. Sorry, the Maker.
Maker, please. Yeah,
please.
Were they tentacle aliens in Eternal as well?
They were more robotic looking to my recollection.
I should have said tentacle robots. Yeah, they're very robotic looking. But then all of the grunts running around don't have arms until they need to do something, and these tentacles sprout out. It's very unnerving. So, you know, character design wise, someone's doing a good job. Mm-hmm. Lore wise, I don't know what the fuck.
Well,
you
know? Is it asking you to care about it? Like it?
No, okay. No. Right. You know, you can kind of get the vague strokes of like, Hell Prince bad.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly enough, you know, Angel Archbishop also bad.
Mm-hmm.
Sentinel King probably good, and also definitely going to get killed for dramatic effect at some point.
Yeah.
You know, but that it does not make a point of like trying to get you to care about the lore, but it's just like, man, it is all vibes is maybe the way to say it. Like,
I mean, to be fair, this is basically like album cover, you know, a heavy metal album cover, the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. That is in that definition, they succeed amazingly with whatever that is going on there.
So question from a gameplay standpoint, the problem I had with like Doom 2016 is it felt like there is a tension between the game, like you said, wanting to be super aggressive, and the fact that it was big into like hidden areas and pickups and collectibles, like those seem like two very at odds design decisions. Does this have any of that tension?
How much did you use the map in 2016?
I don't recall, honestly.
Okay. I don't know if it was this way. I think it was for my time, or maybe you could upgrade the map to get more detailed. But there are quote unquote hidden areas, but there is no hidden area that is not easily findable on the map.
And can like you, if at any just point like you slow backtrack? Down enough to,
what's that?
Can you just backtrack? Like, could you say like, all right, I want to go back to the first level and like go through all the things I missed?
Yeah, there's a mission select. And you could go through that way.
Yeah.
Also, just on a micro level, almost every hidden area is designed like a Skyrim cave, where, you know, at the end of it, you have an easy exit to get on with your life rather than having to go back through the area.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
So yeah, I did a little bit of collectible hunting, but not a ton. But yeah, when you open the map, it is immediately evident where all the secret areas are. So, there might be a little light puzzling in how to get there or what levers to pull at what time, etc. Most of the time it's solved by throwing your shield at it, I've learned. So yeah, it does not slow things down. And I have, while they do have like a resource in the level that you collect, and it's actually a pickup in the level like armor or health now, to collect gold to buy upgrades. I've never felt like I've had to go grind for that to keep myself on the upgrade pace that I want.
So how granular are the upgrades? Is this like a Resident Evil 4 upgrade system? Cause like I liked the system of you find a module for a weapon and then you like make a choice. Like, am I going to unlock the three round burst for the shotgun, or am I going to unlock, I don't know, like the blade for it or something, right?
Yeah, it's even a step simpler than that now in the Dark Ages, where you unlock that tier of the upgrade, and then you can alternate back and forth between which side of that you want to have active. So you don't have to spend two upgrades to have the option to go either way.
Okay. I actually kind of like that.
Yeah.
Honestly, they know what's important, because something that I have appreciated that I did not think like would make that much of a difference. So, if you hold down Q, you get your weapon wheel, but if you tap Q, you just switch back to the last weapon you were using. Right. However, now most of the weapons have kind of like a duo. So your machine gun is also your sniper rifle, or, you know, equivalent. And your super shotgun is also your regular shotgun. And to switch between those, you just hit F. And so at any given time, you have a quick swap to two different locations, the alternate version of the weapon you're holding or the last weapon before that you were holding. And just that one extra dimension of quick swapping makes combat so much better, because I hate nothing more than having to bring up the weapon wheel. It like slows down time while you're doing it, but the exact moment where your cursor changes from looking and turning to moving the weapon wheel is never, like, I never get that right. I feel like I hold it too long, and then I'm getting hit by stuff. Do I click when I get where I want on the weapon wheel, or do I just release Q, or does that cancel the change? It's like, it's terrible. And so just being able to swap, 90% of the time, using those two buttons to something that, if it's not exactly what you wanted, it's at least, appropriate for the type of combat. That's really, really nice. So one extra button for quick swapping and completely changes the game.
Nice.
Go figure.
Here's a question. Sub question. You've played Doom Eternal. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Is it as fucking exhausting as Doom Eternal is? By the time you're halfway through Doom Eternal, you are keeping an eye on like five different cooldowns, picking up any number of colors of pickups to fill up different meters. It just really feels like they got unconfident in you being engaged just with the I chainsaw for ammo and or I chainsaw for health and blah 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 for ammo, right? Like,
yeah, chainsaw for health, I melee for ammo, and I flamethrower for armor, I think, maybe? It was something like that.
No, they have
sanded the rough edges off of that.
Okay. So it's not like a multicolored seven cooldown nightmare.
No. At least so far, I'm a good piece in. I'm like five or six missions in, and I'm still unlocking new mechanics fairly regularly. But no, if you punch someone to death, you get ammo. If you punch them to death while they're blinking, you get ammo and health. But I've noticed if I'm low on health, killing enemies with my guns will also give like tiny bits of health back.
And then
there are enemy types that are carrying shields. And a big thing is like you have to get the shield superheated by shooting them and then throw your shield to basically explode their shields. And that results in a shower of armor. But it is all stuff that you are naturally wanting to do during combat. I never have thought about what way I'm killing an enemy. It's just like that those ways are relevant enough that I'm getting the resources I need. On top of that, they're pretty generous with having pickups, sparkled through the level or sprinkled through the level. And something different from previous games, at least that I didn't notice in previous games, is that certain pickup lines, I guess you could call it, respawn over time. So, you kind of run around this corner and there's armor pickups on the ground. It does the like ding, 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 ding thing as you get your armor. And then if you run back through there long enough later, those will be back.
That's very Unreal Tournament.
Yeah. I don't know if there's some game director going on in terms of if you need that resource, it responds, or if it's purely a timer or what. But the great news is if you're out of anything, just go careening around the level, and eventually you'll find what you need. And I very much appreciate that, because I feel like in previous iterations of the game, once you took that spot or once you took those resources, they were gone, they were spent. And so you kind of could get into these wars of attrition where it's just like, all right, I'm kind of screwed here. I don't see a way to come back other than through more combat.
Okay.
So yeah, the Dark Ages, you get, you know, it's like two or three regular levels and then a, big different level. Like one, I was piloting a giant mech. Mm-hmm. The other, I was flying a dragon. Oh. And the very fun to break things up like that.
Oh, sounds all like in a, the theme like of a like Wolfenstein thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of like, all along the theme of fast and heavy and aggressive.
Yeah.
And it's that's funny Dark Ages. That you mentioned, though, you know, moving around the level being, you know, one of the weak areas, when it's like, just make it so that if you're going across areas you've already been, you can get the dragon or something.
And even if they just spawned a grunt every so often in an otherwise empty area, then I can use my shield bash to charge across the level to them.
That's
and
true.
That feels good. So it's such an easy thing to fix. I honestly maybe could see it being something that's patched if that feedback is as prevalent as it sounds like it might be. So we'll see.
I would almost rather there just be teleporters that take you back to the center, after you. Yeah.
A reset button.
I really don't care. I really don't care about any level of artifice if it enables something, if it enables me not to fucking get lost.
Look, there's health pickups. We're not going to break verisimilitude here.
Yeah. I've been
having a ton of fun with that.
Glad to hear about it in depth. Like how far in it would you say you are?
If I count, probably 7 levels.
Okay.
And I just had the first level that was really a truly big open one, like I was complaining about.
Uh-huh.
That, and it was listed as like a part one. So I don't know if I'm going to go through a stream of those now.
Mm.
We shall see. But yeah, you'll probably hear about it again.
Mm-hmm.
And highly recommend if you liked the other Dooms even a little bit.
Okay.
Have you made it? Are you in hell yet?
Unclear. Again, the lore of this, I have no idea.
Okay, fair.
I do know it seems like an inordinate amount of the time you advance forward by jumping down a giant shaft.
Mm.
Okay.
It's like how much can I travel down? It's like, I mean, it's Silent Hill 2-esque in that sense.
Sounds helly.
Yep. Sounds helly.
Well. Cool. Is that all you had?
No, that's all that's worth talking about for now.
Okay. Moxie, how about you?
I didn't have a ton this week. Did another run of Void Crew with Dennis.
Mm-hmm.
First off, Kay, you need to get on these with
us. I know.
And other than that, I don't know what to say. Like, this is a game that runs almost 100% on just the pure joy of like multiplayer shenanigans.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult to talk about because it's very innately just you had to be there.
Like my most distinct memory from the night when we played Dennis was when I genuinely like actually neglected to get into the seat before you made the hyperdrive jump and I got pasted on the back of the ship. Right. So, like I don't know if it was a brain fart or we didn't communicate or something, but like it wasn't a huge deal. It didn't like end the run or anything, but it was very funny.
So we actually discovered you can actually, if you were already against a run, wall, you will actually survive that.
Huh. Okay. Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. There's tons of stuff like that. One of the, I think kind of dumb, achievements you can do to unlock a cosmetic, but I also think it's kind of endearing, is there's one for, You've got your automatic kind of tractor beam that as you're playing, pulls loot into the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an achievement for, being out in wherever it's called, spacewalk mode, basically, and snatching up an item that the tractor beam already has.
Yeah.
You almost have to find that by accident.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I mean, I will say I love the aesthetics. I like the kind of the esoteric elements, pulling in all the sacred geometry and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I would almost like to see them do a little bit more storyline. Not because like this needs to be a game that's like overwhelmed with that, but just because I would love to see like a Helldivers 2 level where, clearly there is some interesting backstory. I'd mm-hmm. love to see them do a bit with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, I've just been continuing on with Fallen London. I unlocked a new ship, so I now have a pirate submarine. And in order to unlock that, I basically had to go around and chase down bounties and like sink ships so that I could use the pieces for scrap. And then also finished up the Easter event, just finished up. So I'm kind of figuring out what my next kind of big unlock, big task will be. So not a whole lot to talk about there, but mm-hmm. yeah, pretty quiet week this week for me.
Hey, no problem. Cool. Well, that sounds like a segment to me.
Yes, indeed.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, I want to know about games within games within games. There's a whole bunch of places where the developers saw fit to kind of sneak a smaller or older game into the main game, and that sometimes steals the show of even the main game. So what are the best examples of games within games?
To set the boundaries for this, something like Gwent doesn't count, but we're talking about like a video game that you can play within the video game you're playing.
Yes. Oh, I was thinking a nested video game.
Mm-hmm.
However, I will not poo-poo anyone who had other interpretations.
Okay. All right. For my own purposes, mm-hmm. I wanted mm-hmm. to, wanted to see. All right. I can get us started here with, Curtis, who says, I'm always tickled when video games throw random math quizzes at the player. A couple of examples that come to mind. Final Fantasy 14 has a raid boss that does this, and the mobile rhythm game Noise Starlight does it in a few songs.
Yeah. So you thought you were playing a one kind of game, and now you are doing math class.
Yeah, now you're doing math. It's like everybody's favorite little mini game in Trivia Murder Party. Yeah,
I was thinking like, what was that game like? Number Blasters, whatever on the Max in school.
Number Muncher.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Moxie, what does Manioff say?
Manioff says, Yakuza games are good at having some real Sega arcade games in them via simulated Club Sega arcades. I spent a decent bit of time on Outrun and Space Harrier. Bonus mention, Zork and Black Ops 1 and Cold War.
You can play Zork and Blops?
Yeah, that's surprising to me.
Yeah, I had no
idea. Is there a base like in the most recent Black Ops where maybe you got some downtime?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, Zork lines up with Blops being like a weird Cold War thing, but
true.
I don't know. Dennis, what does Threnza say?
Threnza says, my time with Sonic Adventure Battle 2 is roughly 10% playing the base game and 90% raising and racing the Chao. It still makes no sense to me that they've never done their most arguably loved feature ever again in subsequent games. Is this like chocobo racing?
Yeah, no, to agree.
I mean, it's more like a virtual pet kind of deal. So the chow. So they specify Sonic Adventure 2 Battle, which is the GameCube version. So like this isn't even the version of it where you could load the chow onto your VMU and make it into an actual virtual pet.
Huh.
Yeah.
So they did do it again then.
So they did it in the first two Sonic Adventure games.
Yeah, and Sonic Adventure Battle 2 is a port of Sonic Adventure 2 for the GameCube.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So like in the game, you're like taking items and maybe like currency or rings and using it to buy food for the chow, and depending on how you feed them and treat them, they either grow into like angelic chow or a little devilish chow.
It depends on that was the one where there was a good campaign and evil campaign. Yeah. So whichever character you like spend most time with them.
Yeah. Yeah. It was nifty. It's not terribly dissimilar from Chocobo Racing, except there is no goal or game that you're trying to accomplish with the chow, these little, you know, chubby humanoid creature kind of things. Mm-hmm.
There were races though.
I can't remember their races. It was been so long since I played one of those.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah, at least in the GameCube one, there were definitely races.
Mm-hmm.
And cool. All I remember from them is that there was a random chance based on your Chow's luck stat for it to trip.
Uh-huh.
And it was annoying as hell because that would usually be enough to lose a race.
Mm-hmm. I remember the tripping part of it. Mm-hmm. I do remember that. Let's see. Michael says, I spent too much time playing Jetpack via Donkey Kong 64 as a kid. Well, I guess Donkey Kong 64 is not a total abortive disaster. It has Jetpack in it, and Jetpack's a cool game. Did the N64 version, did that have the level customization? Because that's the best part of Jetpack, is making custom levels.
Yeah, Michael, why don't you tell us?
Tell me now. I demand it, Michael. you know, I bet here's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to ask, did it have the level designer? We'll see. We'll see. I want to see if Michael gets the notification. We have a little bit of time left here.
He's usually pretty responsive. Not that I've asked a lot from him, but the dude seems to be around. Yeah. So we'll see.
We'll see. Let's see, Moxie. What does Strawberry Jam say?
Strawberry Jam says lots of great possibilities here, but I'll always have a soft spot for the NES games in the original Animal Crossing. It was incredible getting the first one and not knowing the meaning of third party. It felt like there's no end to the possible games. Marks my first feelings of nostalgia.
Yeah.
It's really a shame that there's absolutely no way this ever happens again, because Tom Nooks needs his money for those ROMs.
They were literally just NES ROMs. It was running an emulator inside of it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Huh.
Was an emulator they stole from someone that they eventually shut down?
I can't remember. Probably. Probably.
Vibes. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's Sega who hired the people who made their emulators, I think. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. That is a good pull. I mean, it's kind of like this, like the Yakuza one where like, okay, we're just going to put a, good ass game in there.
Yeah. But you've got it. Why not?
Speaking of that, Dennis, what does WRF Black say?
They say, in the day of the tentacle, your character can find a computer that lets you play its predecessor, Maniac Mansion, in its entirety.
They took my answer. It's a little annoying because it's the PC version of Maniac Mansion, not the NES version, which does not have the the amazingly good music of the NES version. That turned into one of our favorite little gimmicks that we did on Watch Out for Fireballs. When we did our Maniac Mansion episode, it was more like it was really just an interview with Ron Gilbert. Like, and this was super early in the run of the show. And we never actually did like a discussion about the stuff that happens in Maniac Mansion, like all the things that are cool. We were just asking Ron Gilbert about the stuff. So a couple of years later, when we covered Day of the Tentacle, and we got to the point where you reach the computer with Maniac Mansion on it, we just did a whole Maniac Mansion episode in the middle of that episode. It was so fucking fun.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah.
There are so many things that need to line up to make that joke.
Yes.
See, all I know of those games is that you can just become a total psychopath and like, microwave the dude's hamster and then give it to him?
Yeah, and he'll kill you. That is that's more the case in the PC version, but yeah, you can be a nightmare human in Maniac Mansion. Yeah. Let's see. I need to get back here because I'm looking at lists of these to try and find something that is not Maniac Mansion and Day of the Tentacle. Callum says, as much as I'm not a Crash fan, the use of Crash Bandicoot in Uncharted 4 worked really well with the story. That is a cute moment. It's after you learn the gunplay by having a little nerf fight in the attic. And then like while dinner is cooking, you like bond over playing this old PlayStation game and you're hearing commentary like from the characters, depending on how well you're doing.
Yeah. It is canon that Nathan Drake sucks at video games.
Yes. Yeah. Very good. Let's see. Moxie, what does Brain in a Bowl say?
Brain in a Bowl says, for me, it's the Game Pig handheld system in System Shock 2.
But
mostly because I've got fond memories of hiding in a closet playing around of Minesweeper. Oh, I'm sorry, Swinekeeper, to delay confronting those psychic monkeys.
Amazing.
Yeah. And finally, Dennis, what does Dog Nozzle say?
Dog Nozzle says the Yakuza series is obviously full of mini games, but my favorite is the batting cages. It's a great combo of memorization, timing, and learning to predict the type of pitch that never gets old for me. I play a full baseball game like this, and I don't even like baseball much. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, Yakuza stands on its mini games quite a bit.
It's making me want to play Yakuza.
They're good games.
Which I'm told you have to put in like 90 hours before you even make a dent. So
I've made like three runs at Yakuza 0, and now I'm just waiting for the Switch 2 director's cut one of it to pick up. So we'll see. Yeah. So for my answer, like it's gotta be having Maniac Mansion and Day of the Tentacle, especially because like in universe, like, you know, like it's a game that was made based on the events of the things that happened at Dr. Edison's mansion. You know, so like it is funny that he has it and it's, you know, fictionalized, et cetera. Yeah, that's going to be mine. Otherwise I'd have to do like pull something from Retro Game Challenge or something like that. But that is just a mini game collection with like a wrapper around it.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Moxie, how about you?
Man, I'm not sure I've got a whole lot for like actual video games as the conceit in a game. The only one I can think of I even interacted with at all was Animal Crossing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I have very, very rude neighbors or people out on the street outside.
You can't do anything about that.
So I think I'd go with like the obvious you know, Moxie answer would
Warframe,
be Warframe. The other thing that would keep in mind is I'm a sucker for games that have like RPGs that have some sort of management mechanic where it's like, oh, you can send out your, you know, teams to accomplish things and get loot for you and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are fun. That's fun in Breath of Fire 3 with the Fairy Village. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis, how about you?
Yeah. So for me, I'm going to go all the way back to Ape Escape.
Okay.
The original one, no less, in your like hub area where you could go to the next level or what have you, there was an arcade off to the left. And Ape Escape was kind of like the tech demo for the twin sticks, twin analog sticks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it just had, two games, I believe, that were meant to showcase the analog sticks, but I played them as much as Ape Escape proper. There mm-hmm. was a like skiing game where each stick controlled, the angle of a ski. And then if you held them together at the right angles, you would also get boost. So it was like really a feel based in a way that worked. Mm-hmm. And then the other was just a top down twin stick shooter.
Yeah.
Nice. Asteroids like kind of deal. Mm-hmm. And yeah, those were a ton of fun and, did a whole bunch of battling with my brothers over high scores on those for sure.
Wasn't there something with the, I heard there's something with the controllers, of what was that, PS1 or whatever, where like they can't re-release Ape Escape because there's something with the controllers where you literally couldn't play it with like a, PS5 controller or whatever.
I know that famously those have not, been like re-released, like even on the PlayStation. Oh no, because they didn't include DualShock sticks with the PlayStation Mini. I don't know specifically what the issue is though.
Hmm. Yeah. I can't imagine that it would be a problem.
Yeah.
But maybe, I don't know.
Hmm. No clue. Thanks everybody for responding. If you would like to participate in these, go and follow us on Blue Sky at thelevelpodcast.bsky.social and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thanks to Dennis for putting those up.
Woohoo!
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us and how we feel about them. We have two related stories me and Moxie brought, and then kind of a fun one that Dennis is going to have. The related stories are both regarding the Fortnite inclusion of a Darth Vader character that is a front end, a talking front end for a like Google Gemini generative AI chatbot with mm-hmm. a deep fake recreation of James Earl Jones's Darth Vader voice. James Earl Jones passed away not terribly long ago, and there are some feelings about it. One of the things here, so the headline of the story that I brought, which is, you know, a little bit dumb, is that people are getting the AI Darth Vader to swear. Like Epic is asking people not, or asking people to report that so they can figure out ways to stop it, because that is not brand safe or what have you. The angle for me is related to what Moxie brought. This was done with James Earl Jones's family's blessing. I looked at this mm-hmm. and I thought, well, this is just ghoulish. You know, like how can the family feel about this, you know, voice necromancy? But there was a quote, you know, a statement from the family that said James Earl felt that the voice of Darth Vader was inseparable from the story of Star Wars, and he always wanted fans of all ages to continue to experience it. We hope this collaboration with Fortnite will allow both longtime fans of Darth Vader and newer generations to share in the enjoyment of this iconic character. Yeah. So this also, I pulled mine from a Kotaku article. This also comes on the heels of, like Lucasfilm sharing an AI, like a 2-minute AI generated Star Wars movie that looks like fucking dog shit.
Yeah. That was one of the things I was going to bring up. Like, I cannot fathom who okayed that video.
It doesn't seem like something that, God, I don't know. It really, whatever, the brand is a brand. It exists to make money, and there are going to be ghouls and executives who say AI is the new hotness. Let's put this out. I can't imagine, like, you know, Skywalker Ranch or Lucasfilm or whatever, wanting to put their name on crap that looks as bad as that looked.
Well, and the weird thing is, like, AI wasn't even the core problem of it. Like, it just wasn't, like, it was literally a series of, like, GIFs of these supposed, like, Star Wars creatures that were all literally just, what if we mashed up these two animals?
Yeah, yeah. There was no, like, narrative or anything to it. It was just, we generated a bunch of stuff, and this is the stuff we could edit together. So the news story is that the family signed off on this, and people have gotten it to swear that is going to happen because chatbots and internet, you have Darth Vader walking around with you. You want him to say fuck. That is the victory condition of any situation in which that is happening. But Moxie brought a story that relates to kind of a bigger, bigger complication that complicates this even just beyond the family's wishes.
So the problem is that while they asked the family, they did not ask SAG-AFTRA. First off, am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, SAG-AFTRA.
Okay, sweet. Yes. And basically, this is a little, I don't know if this is maybe somewhat unique in terms of, I don't know if there's been other cases like this, but at least to me, this was a little bit, took me a little bit to understand the reasoning. But as I follow it, the argument is that by doing this, they took away work from voice actors. And while they, potentially are allowed doing that, they are legally obligated to negotiate any change of terms with the union, and they did not.
Right. Important context, this is happening in the middle of a, I believe, nearly year-long strike of specifically the part of SAG-AFTRA that does video game voice acting, specifically because of disagreements over how to handle the role of AI in video game voice acting specifically.
Is it bad for me to say this felt like something where they had to do it, but that they don't really think it's going to succeed? Like, to not say anything would be to give a worse foundation for future legitimate arguments.
It would really fuck up the current negotiations too.
I mean, time I checked, it literally could not succeed because there is no labor relations board right now.
I think it's important to stand on it, but yeah, like the board of the directors, there's all kinds of really fucked up stuff going on with that. They're not actually seeing new cases at the NLRB, because Trump is just refusing to appoint somebody, so they can have a quorum. So they haven't had a quorum for like a year and a half because the Republicans blocked nominations for it. Regardless.
Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, someone doesn't know history.
Yeah. Or,
yeah.
So this sucks. Like,
yeah.
I don't know that it there are two angles of this, right? Like, why does Darth Vader have to respond to your voice chat when you're talking to it? That is just a dumb little gimmick in a game full of dumb little gimmicks, where you have all of these different characters from intellectual properties going around. It's literally just, hey, remember this thing that runs into the voice necromancy thing or the actor necromancy thing, where, like, if this is allowed to continue unchecked, like, nobody ever needs to have a new actor. Like, all of your parents' favorites, for like boomer and older Gen X, like, their culture can just be locked in forever, and you don't have to pay them anything.
And ironically, I feel like that's already happening even without AI.
Maybe this provides incentive to actually do new IPs instead of just rehashing the old thing again and again.
Maybe what provides incentive? Like, if the AI terms are able to be worked out in favor of the actors.
If media is going to be Darth Vader forever, having one AI voice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess it doesn't give the studios incentive, but
no. I mean, people might stop buying it, but like, you know, there's a huge lag time on that actually affecting any change.
Yeah. So on somewhat related note, there's apparently a bill going through Congress right now that make it illegal for 10 years for any state laws to be made about AI.
Mm-hmm. Up to and including like forbidding AI for forbidding development and use of AI for specifically fraudulent purposes. Right. It is one of the most ridiculous things. They're trying to pass it through on the reconciliation budget. It's a fucking nightmare. Call your representatives, both in the House and in the Senate, because it is a reconciliation bill. It has to pass by both and specifically bring that up in addition to all the other hateful stuff in it.
How droll, having representatives in the House and the Senate.
Right. Yeah. For all the, I don't know. I'm not
sorry.
I'm not
going. I just have to troll you.
I am. Oh well. Yeah. Because you're in DC.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. To dangle my representation in front of you. No. What I was going to say was, I'm not going to like give the ground that calling. Because at the very, like, calling doesn't make a difference?
Or is it? Oh, yeah. No, totally. Wasn't trying to say that. Yeah. No, I get what you're saying.
Yep. So, yeah, this is like a huge, like, you know, viper's nest of issues. And, like, it is very disappointing to see. It is very disappointing to see like articles saying like, oh, talking to Darth Vader in Fortnite is the most fun I've had in a game all year. Like, you fucking piggy.
I feel like that's all you are. Okay,
if you eat the slop, all they're going to give you is slop.
Okay, let's hold on. Because I do want to come around to, this is a game for children. My kids were thrilled to be able to recruit Darth Vader to their party and ask him silly questions. And Darth Vader, what's your favorite sport? Crushing my enemies. And they laughed for hours.
Okay.
Like, and there is no world ever where Epic is going to hire 100 million Darth Vader impersonators to jump in there and play.
Unless it becomes, what was it? Enter the Matrix.
They could, that I think was just in text.
They could hire a scab to do an impersonation through a voice translator. And even that is a little bit like mixed ethically. I don't want to invalidate the fun that your kids are having with it. I think that when I'm saying like, hey, don't eat the slop because all they're going to give you is slop. I'm talking to the adults who are like writing articles or talking about this in a glowing way.
Yeah. I mean, I have trouble because I think this is a legitimately good use of AI.
Okay.
Like, I think this is for just the fun factor for kids, right? As a kid's toy. And I know there's a whole bunch of problems with this thing scaling being the everything thing for everyone.
Yeah.
But again, I don't, and like I said earlier, I think it's something where Sega AFTRA can and should, you know, make a fuss about this because they're in the middle of negotiations and they have to. Mm-hmm. But I think when it comes down to it, like, this is what I would want to see it used for. Mm-hmm. You know, ideally, would I be happiest if there was the Darth Vader voice actor that would hop in and play this thing? Sure, why not? But that just doesn't feel feasible to me. And in particular, if you're trying to brute force it like that, like, you're going to run into like, okay, well, some creeper is going to get through and say horrible things to the people playing or what have you. So I don't know.
I think
do we just not make this kind of experience?
I think you minimize the ethical impact by hiring and paying a sound alike, and building the voice model off of that.
They did it with James Earl Jones. So why is hiring a sound alike any better?
I don't know.
Like, then it's just one more person getting paid.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a living person who is currently working as opposed to it going to, I don't know who gets the money. I don't know if money changed hands. I don't.
It's again, the whole area is very fraught.
Uh-huh.
I think, and you know, fuck Epic for a ton of reasons.
Yeah.
and AI for just as many.
Yeah.
This one stands out to me like as one of the less contorted forced uses of AI in a game.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like there's two distinct issues. There's the use of AI in terms of like is AI just being used to make slop, or is it being used for something useful? And then there's the issue of kind of the mechanic, the economics of, like, you know, AI is based on theft, and less so in this instance, because it sounds like they actually did pay his family, maybe.
But I'm saying is, this is the exception that proves the rule, maybe.
To give you a sense of where I'm at, I'm very much in a do not give them a fucking inch mode of thinking on this.
Yeah, no,
it's that's and hence, yeah, hence me saying SAG-AFTRA should challenge this. I don't expect them to win. I don't think they expect to win.
Yeah,
but they should. They should challenge it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know. For me, it's like, there's gotta be a way to do that and recognize, like, yeah, this is cool and fun.
It's a fun toy that is literally just meant to be, you know, wouldn't it be fun if Darth Vader, you know, ran around and gave funny answers to the things that you asked him? I do not see anything inherently sinister to that. What I see inherently sinister to is any number of, like, idea guy tech bros in the game industry specifically who are saying, we don't have to hire writers at all. Look, here's our tech demo of an NPC that you can say anything to and they will respond, and stories will arise, you know, generatively out of it. Basically, I see any success that this has ending up in some kind of pitch deck that is going to eliminate any number of jobs from talented people who need work writing.
It is depressing that there is nothing. It's harder and harder to imagine anything cool that does not immediately get extorted for greasy, slimy, you know, pitch deck purposes.
Yep.
I think monetized. My favorite of this stuff so far is, I don't know, there's some issue where for some reason the AI can't do, like, HTTPS, you know, secure HTTP pages. And so all these tech bros being like, well, do we really need security?
Yeah.
Fuck these guys. This doesn't look like a nail. when all you have is a hammer, you decide anything other than nails is irrelevant.
Yeah. You know, or, you know, if we're just, wait a minute, I can't get that for free. I should be able to get it for free. You know, it's just like any number of, you know, AI company CEOs or whatever coming out and saying, well, we need to overhaul copyright law, you know, in order, you know, if this business is to succeed. And it's like, well, then fucking die. Die. if you need to steal to live, you know, like, for a person, okay, yeah, you know, shoplift whatever food you need or whatever, but, like, if you need to steal at scale from, like, all of the world's culture, then die. You don't deserve to live as a business.
Well, and sorry, I realize we're getting off on the tangent, but, like, that's the other thing is, like, there are, like, ethical solutions for some of this stuff. It's just mostly socialism. Like, setting up a system where it's like, hey, we're going to fund, you know, artists and that sort of thing, and then, like, also you know, use their stuff to train AI, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that could potentially be a viable system where we had, like, a national and, well, endowment for the arts. We used to have one. But you know what I mean? Like, there are scenarios where you could just, like, fund artists.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's messy.
Yeah. Dennis, what's up with Sephiroth these days?
It's up, it's down, it's long, it's short. Apparently today is a cool sword day as of recording.
Okay.
So a little bit of a fluff piece, but it has been confirmed by Tetsuya Nomura. Who is it, the director or the...
Yeah, it's the director, character designer for Final Fantasy VII at Square, specifically heading up, you know, the Final Fantasy VII remake series.
Yes. So they have confirmed that canonically, Sephiroth's sword changes length.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of organic and switches it up, so...
canonically, babe, it's normally much longer than this.
Yeah, it depends on the temperature. Yeah,
this only feeds that fire of jokes. So nothing more to say than that. Sephiroth has a long sword. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it is longer. Make of that what you will.
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, in Advent Children, where it's like, I guess everybody can fly now because we want this to we want this to be, you know, weightless and very quick combat, right? Like this was I mean, this was a case like even just in the original Final Fantasy VII, with the change in art styles. Just like, you know, there was the combat you know, model for Sephiroth, and then there was the in-world model for Sephiroth, and then there was the CGI. Yeah, it was it's always changed. And you know, I think that's also the case for like the Buster Sword too, for Cloud Sword. I think that it's just whatever it needs to be for the whatever it needs to be for the situation.
Yeah, they say something in the interview about like every iteration we did, it just got bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yes.
Like, the Buster Sword is like a one way train.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah.
It's like the it's just like a Power Girl.
I don't know what that means.
Oh, Power Girl, incredibly exaggeratedly busty superhero, because the artist decided that in each comic they would draw her boobs bigger until someone noticed and told them to stop.
That's a fun game. Huh.
Oh, Lord.
Weird. Okay.
But yeah, no, the... Yeah, it's the weird thing for me as someone who never really played these games, like the more stuff I've been reading on like Kabbalah and stuff, his name just seems weirder and weirder.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah, no. That is a time honored you know, Japanese RPG tradition is taking stuff from Kabbalah or like Gnostic texts or something like that and just working it into their lore. Yeah.
Well, so funny enough, the sword has a name, or excuse me. Yeah. The sword has a name.
Yeah. Masamune.
It's Masamune, which is, apparently a medieval blacksmith that is famous.
Yeah.
And has showed up elsewhere in the series as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of like a, you know, a sword named Ultima Weapon or something like that.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and, Cloud can get, kind of a companion sword to that by named the Murasame, I think is what it is.
Very
sorry,
cool.
I can just rattle off these facts about Final Fantasy swords because my brain is broken.
You should do a podcast. That'd be a probably, really good use of those skills.
Yeah. I don't know that I have anything more to say about Sephiroth's sword. How
nope. happy cool sword day, everyone.
Yeah. How does everybody feel about buttoning it up?
Feeling good.
Buttons.
The credit. Thank you so much for listening to level number 544. We appreciate you taking the time. If you would like to support the show, you can leave a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts, and tell your friends. We do not advertise. We just are. Word of
mouth.
We just
abide.
Yeah. Word of mouth is how we succeed. If you're feeling generous, you can go to patreon.com/chuckfeedtv and get a whole bunch of stuff. I mentioned the, new season of Real Itch Hours, talking about 2004's Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines. That season has started in earnest, and it's a good time. It's fun. That is a very good game, with a lot of serious problems. so that is available for patrons there. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
I don't think so.
All right. Well,
if the cops ask, you did not see Ben.
Right. Who's Ben? this is our friend Neb.
Or rather, yes, you did. You were hanging out with him that night.
I've been Kay. You can find me on Blue Sky at K.zone, K-A-Y-E.zone.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Blue Sky at Furia Games, alternately at the Level Podcast, where I put up the multiplayers.
Mm-hmm. I'm just Moxie.
And stick around for some titles. I have two. I have scheming across the map.
Nice.
And I have sounds helly.
Nice. I had sounds helly as well.
Okay.
I had one. I had dangling representation.
Okay. Dennis.
I had obfuscating as well, but that I think yours was better.
Okay.
Go on.
No, I want to hear what you said.
Oh, I was going to say, I kind of like scheming across the map.
Okay.
No objections here.
It is decided.